Pitch Talks, brought to you by North Star Bets. That's a win.
Hello and welcome once again. Come on in, sit right down, and join us on the latest episode of Pitch Talks, brought to you by North Star Bets. I am your boy, the Zoobs, Andrew Zuber from The Parlay, joined, as always, by my co-host, my co-pilot, the smart guy in the room from North Star Bets. It's Nick Ashburn. Nick, how has your 2 weeks been?
It's been a great 2 weeks. We're getting deep into September here. We're nearing the end. I know there aren't that many races left in terms of which teams will and will not make the playoffs, but there's still a lot happening in MLB. There's a lot happening for the Toronto Blue Jays. And yeah, I'm starting to get excited about October baseball in the playoffs.
It's unabashedly the best time of year. And one of the things that I love about baseball is that September around this time starts to feel like the playoffs already. It sort of already feels like we're in those must-win games, especially with the way the schedule has broken for the Jays, playing Tampa, playing Baltimore, playing the teams that they are going to have to leapfrog ahead to get where they want to be, which is, as we know, the first wild card spot. No thanks to the Pittsburgh Pirates, though if you're counting on the Pittsburgh Pirates to win a baseball game, you have nothing to complain about when it falls apart at the end. But it certainly has been a good September for Blue Jays fans. And the team, of course, as well. Bo Bichette sort of fueling things. The whole team really starting to click, things coming together, starting to get a bit of a lead. They play Tampa Bay coming up this weekend, but a 2.5 game lead as of recording here on Wednesday afternoon at the top of the wild card standings, basically where you want to be. Are you buying, Nick, the idea that everything is clicking at the right time for the 2022 Toronto Blue Jays?
Yeah, I mean, you can pick out individual performances right now and feel a little bit uncomfortable with them. Like, if you're wanting to nitpick, you can say, you know, I don't really feel great about where Vladdy is at the plate right now. You know, Teoscar Hernandez just had an offensive outburst, but he's been, you know, not the best. But we know how this works in baseball, right? Like, you're not going to have a 9-man lineup where every single player is performing at the height of their capabilities. You know, George Springer is playing relatively hurt right now. We have Alejandro Kirk has an injury of some level of concern, but Bichette has been fantastic. You have a lot of the guys are hitting well, especially in kind of the middle bottom part of that lineup. They're getting great contributions there. You feel actually fairly good about four starters, which hasn't always been the case this season. So yeah, I think the Blue Jays are looking, I don't know if it's as good as they've ever looked because they've had some pretty good runs this year, but it's been a bit of an up and down season. And through September, they've been pretty consistent and pretty solid across the board.
It is finally time to stop saying it's early. And the purveyor of the it's early mindset, Mike Wilner from the Toronto Star in the Deep Left Field podcast, will join us in just a few minutes to get a little deeper into some of those performances you were talking about and talk a little bit about Ross Stripling, who has been on his podcast a whole bunch, Bo Bichette. We got a lot to talk about with Mike, but first, you and I chop it up a little bit more here. You did mention Vladdy. Obviously, geez, the ground balls, the double plays, leading the league in double plays, concerning George Springer, the wincing and taking one arm off the bat, but then also hitting fairly well, needing to be in center field. Obviously, we've seen him miss a bunch of time in the last 2 years. That's an important thing. Bo, as mentioned off the top here, has been so white hot in September. It has been bananas, really helping drive this incredible stretch. They've been on some huge hits, some really big at-bats. Teoscar Hernandez, Alejandro Kirk, Kenny Jansen, I would want to mention, big-time Jano Hive guy here. We'll get into that a little bit later on as well. But when I lay that out to you, you made a point there about how many different position players there are that you can look at the performances. Going into the playoffs, obviously it's a bit of a crapshoot when you start, especially with the wild card 3-game set. When you are looking at, you know, sort of the box scores, if you will, or the rolling 10-game trends, or however you're a much smarter than me when it comes to the stats. Whatever you look at to decide if a guy is having a good stretch, who's the first guy on this roster that you're looking at to be like, if X player is going, I feel all right about their chances against any team in the wild card?
It sounds obvious, but it really is Vladdy. And the reality is that our memory is kind of short with baseball. And especially last season, this is a guy who led the American League in home runs. He was fairly close to a triple crown at one point. Like, his highest point, his ceiling, what we know he's capable of, not just over a short period of time, but over a 162-game season, is significantly better than anyone else on the team. Like, even George Springer, who's had fantastic season, is in the midst of an incredible offensive career, has never had a season like the year Vladdy had last year. I don't think necessarily that that's something he's going to recreate even over a 2-week stretch here at the end or in the playoffs, but his ceiling is so high in terms of what he's able to do at the plate. And frankly, what he's doing now is relatively unimpressive. The gap between those things are so significant that him turning the corner in any way, finding that form, would kind of reshape how this lineup looks. And the lineup already looks good. People complain too much about this lineup, to be honest, about how sometimes they struggle with lefties and certain righties. Every lineup struggles from time to time. You look at the overall numbers, they're right at the top of the board. Like, this is an elite offense, but it can be a whole nother level of impressive if Vladdy can find that. And at this point, you're kind of just hoping something clicks with him. He's so talented and the track record is there such that it absolutely can, but it's almost as simple as he's got to get the ball off the ground with some level of consistency. It hasn't happened for, you know, kind of a month now, but it could happen at any time. Like, that's part of what makes watching and analyzing baseball frustrating sometimes, is that things seem to, you know, there's a trend that you're following until it's over. And the Blue Jays need Vladdy's trend of being this guy to be over.
Yeah. And somebody that, to sort of follow up to your point, somebody that I feel, and I think probably most fans feel, is once he does have it unlocked a little bit, it's very easy to see 3 weeks where he cannot make an out, where he's just, you can't pitch to him or he's going to smash it. I think that's something that is a big part of the appeal there as well, is that when he is on, there's nothing you can really do. Similar to the way that we've seen Bo Bichette sort of light up in the last little bit. For me, it is still George Springer. I totally agree with all your points there. And even to the caveat of, like, early this year, Bo wasn't playing up to his potential, but was still league average. Vladdy has been disappointing and yet continues to rattle off double-digit hit streaks, continues to find a way to get on base, continues to be an above-average hitter even with all the warts. For me, George Springer is either a one or a zero, right? He's either not in the lineup, or he is the most important piece of this puzzle. Playing center field, the most important defensive outfield position, leading off, getting things going, driving in those guys at the bottom of the order and setting the table for Vlad and Bo and Teoscar and Alejandro Kirk. It's so important right now. The backup options for center field. I love Jackie Bradley Jr. I think it's almost art the way that he plays center field. I think Bradley Zimmer is a guy that has value on a playoff roster when you need defense, when you need base running. Neither one of those guys do you want starting in center, or Mel Tapia as well. You don't want any one of those three guys starting a game in center field for you. You don't want to not know who is leading off for you when these games are must win, when they're playoff games. For me, it's just so important to have that George Springer leading off, playing center field, setting the table, bringing all the skills that he brings to the lineup. I think it's so important. I really do. I think when he is playing well, it trickles down. You sort of see a better mood. You see easier games. Everything seems to work just a little bit better when George Springer is clicking. So that would be where I go with that for sure.
Yeah, and even recently when his power has not been at the apex, like, he can be a top 15 power hitter in the league. Like, that's not a crazy thing to say about him, even though as a Blue Jay just hasn't really played enough games to be in the midst of those leaderboards. But lately the power hasn't really been there, and whether that's him dealing with the injury or not, it's hard to say, but he's still immensely valuable as a guy who gets on base at, I don't know, he's getting on base at a 360, 370 clip. Even if he doesn't have his top end power, that's an incredibly important table setter for the lineup.
The pitching staff, tentatively going to say there's been a bit of a leveling out of the top four. You know, Barrios, from all that's been made of his season, when he's bad, the blowups are unavoidable. When he's been good, he's been pretty darn good. Gausman is, you know, we've said the greatest victim of BABIP maybe in the history of baseball. Alec Manoah continues to be that dude. And Ross Stripling has been really, really excellent moving into a starting rotation. What's your sort of confidence level on those four guys? We can go through one by one really quickly. I'm going to go ahead and assume that your Alec Manoah level is a 10 or a 9 at the very least.
Yeah, I'll go 9. I don't like to push it to 10. You know,
yeah, nobody's a 10.
He's not Sandy Koufax in his prime, but he's pretty damn good. So I'd give him a 9. He's been so consistent, so reliable. Like you mentioned, those Barrios blowups. Manoah hasn't pitched less than 5 innings in a start all season. He hasn't given up more than 4 runs in an outing all season. Doesn't mean every time he comes out, it's a fantastic start. But every time, to use a cliche that I generally don't like, he gives the team a chance to win. And so that you got to give him a 9. Gausman's a weird one. Like maybe a 7.5. He's kind of struggling a little bit right now. You talk about Springer being a little bit binary in terms of his health. Gausman is a little bit of a 1 or 0, depending on how his splitter looks that day. And more often than not, it looks good. That's why those season-long numbers are fantastic, especially the fielding independent ones. But there exists that possibility that the splitter comes out flat and then he's just kind of throwing straight fastballs at guys. Not ideal. And then the next two guys are interesting. You know, Stripling, you know, the track record of the season's been fantastic. He doesn't go that deep into games normally, so you have to think about how you're going to use your bullpen if he's starting a playoff game, for instance. But yeah, you know, other than his last outing, really strong. You'd have to give him, you know, 7, just under Gausman. And you know, Barrios is creeping up. A trend that I've been watching a lot is his pitch mix, and it's been different lately. Like, he's really using that changeup. He's trying to get left-handers off of him. He's trying to get that fastball to tunnel with something, because his big breaking ball, it's his signature, is so horizontal that it doesn't actually work perfectly with his kind of straight forcing fastball. One of the reasons why it gets hit a ton. Now he's using his changeup a lot more. Hard to say whether that'll work or not, but his last 3 outings have been pretty good. So I wouldn't put him much lower than a 6 based on talent, you know, overall career track record, and him being fairly good recently. The Blue Jays are in a better spot than they looked to be in, I don't know, kind of a month ago, when you felt worse about Barrios and you hadn't seen as much of Stripling excelling this year.
Might be a record here. I think I am more pessimistic than you on 3 of those 4. Damn. I think Manoah for me is a 10. To also go into cliches, a guy that when you think about what a playoff pitcher is, it's him, a guy that's like, it's not like, oh man, it's a playoff game. He's like, yes, it's a playoff game. Like, I cannot wait to get out there. I cannot wait to get under the bright lights. Gausman, for all the reasons you said, the fielding independent numbers may be enticing. You are not independent of fielding. The playoffs, fielding dependent. This is where all those expecteds and all the should-haves and all the, you strip away this, normalize this, none of that matters anymore. It's what happens in this game, and he has had crazy luck. He's had some crazy things happen, and as you said, he's a guy with one big weapon that he's able to really dominate with. You worry about scouting reports. You worry about any little tipping, any little thing, any little edge he can have, and suddenly the house of cards collapses. Maybe with you on Stripling as a 7, I think the changeup has been an excellent weapon. They've really used that and utilized that as a guy that can get outs on both sides of the plate, and started to go, as you mentioned, get into the 6th inning. And I have a little bit more faith in the bullpen. If Stripling's giving you 6 in a big game, I think right now, between Garcia, Romano, Bass, I think you have Mesa. You'll have enough to survive those 3 innings. And then my Barrios confidence does not remain. I when it's like he either blows up or he tiptoes, to me, the blow up alarm goes off a little earlier, especially with how much shorter the leashes get in these playoff games, when we've seen too much. Like, whereas now maybe he gives up 3 runs early and they let him ride it out. You give up 3 runs through 2 innings in the playoffs in 2022. The bullpen is up and active. There's like Mitch White's coming into the game. That's sort of how it works in the playoffs now. So, man, my Barrios confidence might be a 4, might be a 4.5 if we're being generous. And I think my Gausman is like a 5, and Stripling might be a still. I should be more confident. What the heck's going on here?
The Gausman one deserves a little bit more, I think. I can buy your arguments for the other one, but like, you got to give Gausman a little more credit. He's had a great year.
I think I've reverted now to a fully terrified state at all times. We'll move forward. We'll talk a little bit more about the pitching, especially Ross Stripling, a guy that you'll hear on Deep Left Field an awful lot with our guest this week, Mike Wilner. Before we get to that, we have a couple of things to go through. Good take, bad take. We did it last week. We're going to bring it back, and then a couple of mailbag questions. Nick, I will start this week with a good take, because I see it's natural to me. It's like breathing. My good take this week: teams are not scared of the New York Yankees. I know they were unbelievable start to the year. Aaron Judge has been unbelievable. I think the warts that we saw in that down stretch that they had in August has team going, this is not your average 100 win team. People aren't scared of a 100 win team. I don't think teams are that worried about the Yankees. Yes, they have had some great stretches this year, obviously early in the year. I think chips are down. If you're looking at this and say it's the Yankees, Houston, the Jays and Seattle as the four teams that are standing after the wild card. I think you'd rather play the Yankees than Houston. I think maybe there are teams that would rather play the Yankees than the Blue Jays. I think there are teams that would rather play the Yankees than Seattle. I personally, and I think people may agree, think the teams are not currently scared of the New York Yankees. Is this actually a bad take? Did I screw this up? Who knows? What do you think, Nick?
I mean, I think that you've been trying to shoehorn the Yankees are bad into every show that we've done in one way or another.
And that I like the Mariners. Yeah, the two things.
that being said, I don't think it's I'd be much more scared of the Astros. I'd put it that way. Like, I think that there's a significant gap between where the Astros are at and where the Yankees are at. And right now I'd kind of throw the Yankees into that pool of Blue Jays, Yankees, Mariners, Rays, and I'd rate those teams all fairly similarly, even though the Yankees would have a superior record. So in that regard, I think you're right. I think that's a good take. You know, although there's room for a bad take too. That's part of the segment. This is my good take. This is not the freshest news, but we haven't talked since this sort of came down.
True.
And that's that all of the rule changes proposed, the larger bases, the pitch clock, the stolen bases, not the stolen bases, the shift being canceled, for lack of a better term. I think that by 2025, which may sound like a long ways away, but it's really not, unfortunately, no one is going to have a problem with any of them. They're all going to go down as a major success. I know there are purists that have problems with the pitch clock, and particularly there are pitchers who have problems with it, but it's worked so well in the minor leagues in terms of shortening games, which isn't a concern for every fan, but is a concern for some fans. They're going to get a lot of great headlines out of this. Like, new change has shortened games, made baseball faster after so many years of being slow. People are just going to get used to it. People get used to almost everything. They just habituate to things. That's what the human brain does. I love the larger bases. You know, the stolen base part of baseball is one of the most exciting plays. It has shown at the minor league level to increase steals. Like, it sounds like it wouldn't. It sounds like this tiny little petty thing. But the, you know, the probabilities that go into whether it's worth stealing a base or not, those margins are so thin that things like this do make a difference. And then the shift, I'm totally against banning the shift from an intellectual standpoint. I think it's insane to take away viable strategies from baseball teams. I think that it in theory makes the game worse. In practice, though, in the year 2025, when you're watching a baseball game, I think it is unbelievably unlikely that you're going to look at the field and there's going to be a hit that goes through into center field and be like, man, I wish that there was a guy there back from when the shift used to happen. Like, as much as it seems silly to ban the shift, I don't think it'll actually have that much of an effect on the game. It's for particular hitters, yes, but overall, maybe not as much as people think. But I just don't think anyone's going to miss it. I don't think there's going to be a moment where people are like, oh, damn, I wish the shift was around.
A team will find a way to skirt this as best they possibly can. I'm with you on all these. I think illegal defense exists in every sport. The NBA had to change the hand check rules. They've had to introduce the restricted area. NFL has made it easier for receivers to not get decapitated. The hockey had to get the trapezoid behind the net and get rid of the interference. And it's one of those things where those things were all strategies at one point too. But if what do you want the game to be going forward? And I think baseball has been resistant to change. I think most of this is going to be pretty good, especially, you know, the ball in play is supposed to be the exciting thing that makes baseball different. And the shift, for all the value that it does add for defenses, when a left-handed hitter comes up and crushes a ball into right field, like, should be a hit. Like, I know that it's like, it's just that simple to my brain. Like, you'd be able to, like, I think the shift has taken away being able to tell off the bat if it's a good thing or not. And I think bringing that back a little bit more does have some value. So I agree with you. That is a good take. Nick, my bad take. I don't think we are even close to properly measuring the value of a catcher. I think we have pop times. We have framing metrics. Catcher is such a almost spiritual position in my mind, where it's like, there are so many other factors. There's going out to calm down your pitcher. There is knowing what the guy is feeling that day. It's emotional. It's sort of in a gray area. And I think sometimes one of my problems with baseball is this need to quantify everything, that everything has to be quantifiable. It has to be a number. And if it doesn't have a number, it doesn't exist. I don't like that in general. I think there's, I'm a romantic about baseball, especially about the catcher position. I just think like it's there's nothing like it anywhere else in sports. And I'll use Danny Jansen as the example. You know, you look at it and you say, man, Gabriel Moreno has the better pop time. And you say, Alejandro Kirk has really had some great framing metrics. And yet the Jays have an unbelievable record when Danny Jansen plays. It's just sort of like you can't quantify what he's doing, but it seems to work. He seems to have a great relationship with the pitchers. And there's something to that. And I think sometimes with this sport, the things, and I think sports in general, but baseball especially, because it's so matchup exclusive, I think sometimes we get a little too far into, if something can't be quantified, if something can't be proven, if something doesn't have science behind it, it must not exist or must not matter. And I think the catcher position especially is one of those things that I don't want to have to wade through framing metrics and pop times. I think there's a huge value to a relationship the catcher has with the pitcher. And I think whether that's provable or not with numbers, I think it's something that I want to make sure we keep in the sport. Too soft? Is that too mushy?
I think it's too good a take. I mean, based on my reputation, you would have people believe that I would want to push back on that, that everything needs to be quantified. That's not where I'm at with it. I agree with you. There's components of it in terms of playing psychologist that you're not going to quantify. Even some game calling is part of it, and how much is the catcher have leash to do their own, how much is coming from the dugout, and then the wristband, and like how those contingencies work. It's a tricky thing to parse right now. It's incredibly difficult to know how good a catcher is at some of those soft skills. Even if you go to harder skills, like some of the things are very hard to quantify in terms of, you know, throwing base runners out. Like, who are your pitchers? We know that people steal more on certain pitchers. That has a bigger difference than the catcher. So it's hard to parse whose fault it was blocking pitches. Some guys have more success with that. Well, what does their pitching staff throw? Like, there's so much complexity to that position. Like, it's as if in football, an offensive lineman, like say your center was also your offensive coordinator on the field. Like it's right. A weird mix of stuff where they're in some cases, especially guys who don't hit, they hit ninth. It feels like they're a role player, but also they're truly essential to the game. So yeah, I think your bad take is bad in the sense that it's a good take.
It'd be too much data is my bigger. I'll save one for next time. Data is also a thing.
I will say I don't love some of the records that get quoted about Jansen and the Blue Jays. Like Moreno has caught so few games and people are in a rush to be like, oh, he's got, and it's things where people confirm their priors, right? Like in their mind, Moreno is a young, inexperienced catcher. So therefore, when they see that the Blue Jays record with him behind the plate is bad, it's easy to weave that story. But at the end of the day, like, we just haven't seen enough to know.
Totally. Great counter.
Big picture. I like it, though. Here's my bad take. This is bad for a different reason than normal. Normally, it's a bad take because it's totally unresearched and kind of from the heart. This is researched, but incredibly selectively. So my bad take is that pitching doesn't win championships anymore. It's all about hitting. Oh, and boy. I'm gonna go through just quick numbers with you. We're going to use WRC plus as sort of a one size fits all offensive stat here. No, we're going to cancel that. We're going to use position player war. See, I should know my own research. This is part of why it's bad.
That's why it's a bad take. Yeah.
starting with the Chicago Cubs in 2016, they were first in position player war, won the World Series. 2017, Astros were first. Obviously, it's a complicated thing, but they were first. They won the World Series. 2018, Red Sox were first, were second in position player war, and the Dodgers, the losers, were first. 2019, the Nationals were 10th, but again, the Astros, the losers, were first. 2020, the Dodgers were third, but it was a weird small season. You know, third's pretty damn good as well. 2021, Atlanta was not there, but the losers, again, were first. So you see, again, it shouldn't be too complicated to say, well, the team with the best position players is often in the World Series. But when I look at the last 6 years, I do see this trend of, you know, people always say that it's pitching that wins. And when people are picking World Series winners, they're often looking at the top of that rotation. The reality is that the way people play matchups and work bullpens these days, it's a little easier to fudge that pitching a little bit, whereas I think it's harder to kind of fake your way into a dominant lineup. So again, this is a very small sample. It's very selective, but we're talking about fitting with your priors. My priors are the way pitchers are being used has changed. Therefore, hitters might be more valuable. therefore, yeah, this year, I guess the Dodgers are going to win the World Series, which is not really a hot take.
Or make the World Series.
The World Series.
Which is also not a hot take. I'm into that. I think, to your point, the way the pitchers are used now, the bullpens, that you have to have guys that are borderline matchup proof as hitters. It has to be, doesn't really matter which guy you're bringing in from the bullpen. Doesn't matter who your starter is. You're going to have to get 27 extremely difficult outs. I think that's right on target. And especially as you see starters going less and less and leashes getting shorter and shorter. What good is the Jose Barrios $127 million if he's out in the third inning in the wild card game? It doesn't really help you all that much to have made that investment when Ross Stripling could be the guy that also gets you five innings of serviceable ball. The most important thing is having the hitter. I am into it, Nick. We have a quick mailbag to handle. We got a question that's like, it's such pure Nick Ashburn bait that I was like, we have to include it. The Blue Jays hypothetically planning a big heist. Fill in the following roles for your team. There's a lot. Gentleman leader, right-hand dude, wise veteran, the tech guru, the explosive specialist, the financial aid, the acrobatics, the transportation, and the pickpocket / spy.
Okay, so this is 9 roles. It made me think of Ocean's 11 immediately. Maybe that's sure. Unfair. Maybe that's too obvious. But it's a similar number of people. It makes me think of the characters in that movie. That's sort of how I approach this. So my number one guy, the gentleman leader, again, maybe this is chalky. I don't know if you can be chalky when comparing a baseball team to Ocean's 11. Would be George Springer, right? Like, he's the veteran. He's been around. He's arguably the most charismatic guy on the team. He's got that easy way with people. He's not necessarily doing the hardest part of the labor, but he's pulling the strings. And then you've got your right-hand dude. This is Brad Pitt. His main role is to be eating something at all times, sort of a backup for a lot of different positions, keeping the crew together. I've got Vladdy here, good vibes guy. Also, be able to communicate with the team who are Spanish-speaking, like making sure that are as included and as involved. Vladdy's no stranger to a meal, so he's in there. Wise veteran, I've called on this name before in these type of scenarios. We've done a lot of questions or discussions like this. I'm going with David Phelps, just a guy who has seen it all, done it all. I'm not exactly sure who the Ocean's 11 equivalent of that is. Maybe it's the guy who plays Lyman Zerga or whatever.
I think I would put Jackie Bradley Jr. there, by the way. It would be my like guy who's been in the AL East Wars, has been in the World Series. Maybe you don't expect him, a bit of a background guy, but you people lean on him for advice. Go on.
Yeah. So, and absolutely feel free to interject with your picks. I like that player was absolutely considered for me, Jackie Bradley Jr. Tech guru. Again, tricky. We don't really know how the tech aptitude of these players. I went with Ross Stripling just because we know he's into investments. Often that involves numeracy, which can be translated to coding. I don't feel incredibly strong about that. Again, we don't really know. Explosives, I've got Bo Bichette. This is a personality thing strictly. Like, you've got to have that level of recklessness, thrill-seeking type of behavior. I feel like Bo can channel that Don Cheadle energy. Financial aid is tricky because you got to go with someone with a big contract, right? And I've already used George Springer here. Kevin Gausman doesn't feel right to me. He's a little bit too laid back, a little bit too West Coast. I don't know. Do you have Gausman for any of these? I did not think he was a heist guy.
Tough. I don't think I do see a Gausman fit. Maybe transportation, but I don't see it.
Yeah, he could be that chill wheel. Anyway, I put Jose Barrios. I felt like he wouldn't want to get his hands dirty. Like, he's got a reputation as sort of a family man. Kind of a clean living type of guy. But
the $127 million helps too as the financial aid.
Exactly. So he's got the big contract and he doesn't want to get his hands dirty. Acrobatics is interesting. You could make an argument for Bradley Zimmer. I thought about it. My theory with Zimmer is he's too long. He just doesn't have the same level of agility. So I went with Raimel Tapia here. I considered Espinal, but I used him later. Transportation was hard. Like, who's your wheel man? Like, who came to your mind for this one? Because I really struggled.
Matt Chapman comes to mind for this one. He has to be. You have to know that he'll be there. And then on the getaway, there's like an inconspicuousness to it, right? Sort of the art of the getaway drive is to drive quickly, but not suspiciously. And I think his the casualness of his greatness at third base and his complete nondescript sort of look of just like a regular looking guy, just like a regular looking white guy that you couldn't pick out of a lineup, and his casual brilliance at third base, I think carries you as a guy that you're like, you can put him behind the wheel. You know you're getting where you need to go and not attracting any extra attention.
Yeah, I like that better than my pick. My pick was Adam Simber. I just felt like he's a little bit of a weirdo in terms of the way he throws. Maybe he's that guy who has, he knows the routes through the city. Mm. Like he's a different, he thinks differently. And I think you need that in a getaway driver. But I like Chapman a lot. I like the casual brilliance component of that. For the pickpock spy, I went with Espinal. You know, you could argue just the best hands on the team. That's a very literal way to interpret it, but he is quick and he has those hands. Do you have any, what are sort of the ones that you had that were a little bit different from that crew?
Well, I feel like there has to be a spot for Jordan Romano. There just sort of has to. He just sort of has the, like, this guy needs to be involved somewhere. I would maybe put Ross Stripling as the financial aid, just sort of the similar, for the same reasons that he's in Tech Guru. It's like he's a guy that you know you can handle the finances, but then I don't know who I slide in as Tech Guru. Whoever's the youngest, I mean, you put the tech in
Gabriel
the hands
Moreno.
Of, yeah, Gavin Moreno. Exactly right. Very, very tough. I think you laid that out. You laid that out pretty nicely. I would have Chapman as your wheelman. Probably flip Stripling and Barrios for tech and financial aid. I don't know where you would put Romano for explosives. I guess, or put Romano maybe for explosives instead of Bichette, but you also have to have Bichette in there somewhere. So yeah. I think you laid it out real good. And just quickly, Nick, a question for you here in the mailbag. Would you rather have a player who goes about his business or a player who battles? That's from the Dr. Internet, of course.
Dr. Internet always providing good red meat for this mailbag. You know, it's not a popular choice these days. I like a guy who goes about his business. I like the Barry Sanders, you know, act like you've been there before. I'm not going to be the police. I'm not going to say don't be enthusiastic. Like, I don't want to say that you can't have that in the game. Everyone, whatever feels right to you is what you should do. And there's a cultural aspect to that as well. But I always thought that it was cool, kind of like the cool guys don't look at explosions type of vibe.
Right,
like the
right.
I did this amazing thing, but it's no big deal. Personally, I always have found that to be cool. But again, if you want someone who battles, someone with a little bit more flair, draws more attention to themselves, absolutely understandable. My personal opinion, I just like those guys who go about their business. Matt Chapman, actually, a pretty good example of that.
He's a guy who goes about his business. I like a battler. I like a battler. I like a little flame. I like a flaw as well. I'm big into a guy with a flaw. I'm a huge Teoscar Hernandez guy for that reason. Speaking of a guy who battles and a guy who goes about his business, one of the veterans, one of the true great guys of the industry, and somebody I know that has been awful kind to both of us and has spent decades covering and talking about this team, we are going to welcome to the show Mr. Mike Wilner. We are joined now live from the streets of Philadelphia, one of the true greats of the Blue Jays beat and of the industry in general. It is a pleasure to be joined by from the Toronto Star, and one of the OGs, one of the people that when there was very little Blue Jays coverage to go by, somebody you could reliably get to give you smart, intelligent discussion about the team in an honest way that we always appreciate. One of the legends of the business, joining us from Philadelphia, Mike Wilner. Mike, thanks for coming on, brother.
It's my pleasure. You're far too kind. I appreciate all those words, but I guess I've been doing this a long time, right? So thank you. I'm happy to be here.
My pleasure. Yeah, wanted to before we get into it, you know, I sometimes feel like an outsider in the business, and when somebody like me pops up at the Rogers Center, it is meaningful when people who have been established in the industry make time to say hello and make you feel comfortable. And you were always that for me, Mike. So it means a lot to be able to have you on the show today. I'm sure I speak for Nick as well. I love to speak for Nick anyway. So don't worry.
Yeah, everything Zoob says is speaking for me.
Dangerous.
Well, look, I mean, that's the way it was in the 80s when I started. you know, at the X, and Jim Hunt of the Toronto Sun, the legend, was went out of his way to be nice to me. There were a couple of others. There were a lot of people who didn't talk to me. I was just sort of like, you know, buzzing around. And there were a few people who didn't talk to me until I got on the broadcast in 2000, or on the beat in 2001, even when I was working for 680 the years before that. I wasn't just a university kid anymore. So I'm always, you know, if I'll always say hi, I'll always try to be nice. And then there are a lot of people who just earn that return of whatever, who show up all the time, who know their stuff and who know how to behave down there. And I'll always go out of my way to help them out if I can.
It's noted and appreciated from this end. That is for sure. We'll get into the baseball here. We'll lead you off. It's pretty clear the Jays are going to make the playoffs. There's a handful of games left. They're far enough above Baltimore that it's pretty much not an issue. What do you think they need to do to make this a successful season? I know that definition depends on your mileage. And to you, what does a successful Blue Jays season look like from here on out?
I mean, honestly, I just think it's making the playoffs, because once you're there, there's really, I mean, nothing you can do. We saw it in 2020 against Tampa Bay, how quickly it was over, but that was a Blue Jays team that really wasn't ready for that yet. This is a team that is, but they could still wind up having to go to Seattle or go to Tampa Bay and lose a best of three without playing a home game in the playoffs, and it happens. You know, really what you're looking for is a ticket. And once you get a ticket, everything's up for grabs. I think, you know, one of the best ways to look at it is that the playoffs are an entirely different thing from the regular season. It's changing a little bit in that they've compressed, they've lost some off days, so now depth matters a little bit more than it used to. But the things that win you a best of three are the things that have nothing to do with winning over 162 games. And, you know, someone asked me who I would prefer the Blue Jays opponent be in the first round of the playoffs. I said Kansas City, and that's not even a guarantee you'd win, right? I mean, the worst team in the league could beat the best team in the league in a best of three, two or three out of 10 times. So I think to you know, base success on a long playoff run or a series win or a championship, it's the wrong thing to do, because there are so many variables in a short season in the playoffs. And it's not, you know, I think we come at it from a hockey perspective sometimes, where you can win by wanting it more. You can get those battles in the corners. You can lay out and block shots and all that stuff. Baseball, you get your turn, they get their turn. You can't win by wanting it more, and often trying harder is a recipe for failure. So, yeah, that's a long way to say just making the playoffs for me is a successful season.
On that end, you would say it's basically already a success then, more or less?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, based on what we expected at the beginning of the season, I would have said the first place in the AL East would have been a successful season. But, you know, the Yankees won 80 of their first 100 games or whatever it was. And the Pirates can't hold a four-run lead in the ninth inning. It's even with the free fall that the Yankees are in now, it's in the All-Star break, it wasn't reasonable to say that the Blue Jays should win the AL East.
Mike, you touched on sort of the unpredictability of the short series. That applies to probably seven-game series, five-game series, as well as just a three-game wildcard set. But something we've been debating on this show over the last couple of weeks has been sort of what is that ideal scenario for the Blue Jays? Like, do you think the best outcome for them is, A, having that top wildcard slot and potentially, let's throw the division out for a second. In theory, that's possible, but I think we'd all agree it's very unlikely. That top wildcard spot where you're hosting the series, but you're hosting it against Tampa Bay or Seattle, who are both very dangerous teams, or a scenario where they're in that third spot where they've lived for a lot of this time and you go and face AL Central. Like, is being the top wildcard seed actually a negative in just the way it's playing out right now?
No. Having those games at home is never a negative, right? That's the most important thing, because of the variability of the three-game series. It matters so little who you play, right? Unfortunately, it looks like, well, I don't know, unfortunately, bad timing-wisely, They're pulling back the vaccination requirement across the border. So we don't know whether Robbie Ray wound up getting vaccinated or didn't. But if the Blue Jays host Seattle, it looks like that's not going to be an issue. I don't understand why they couldn't have waited 2 weeks to change things. Here's they're not going to do that. But really, look, Cleveland came in here and beat the Jays. Beat the Jays in Cleveland. You face them in a three-game series. You've got Shane Bieber and Cal Quantrill. You've got James Karinchak and Emmanuel Clase in the bullpen. So they're no walkover by any means. And you have to go there, and it's outside. And who knows what kind of crap you might have to be playing in. I don't think it's going to snow in the first week of October or anything like that, but it could be really, really poor conditions. No, you want to be at home. It doesn't matter who you play. You want to be at home.
At the risk of almost stealing a catchphrase, you have long been the purveyor of the it's early mentality. And to get to a individual player level, somebody that I think throughout most of this year, you could have played the it's still early card, and now we are at the late part of the season. And Bo Bichette has gone from somebody who was wearing the goat horns a little bit earlier this year to somebody that has clearly been a key driver to the push in the back part of the season. What do you make of his season as a whole, and what do you make of the recent success that he's had?
Well, the recent success is just stupid. I mean, he's hitting 440 over 3 weeks in September he had 21 runs batted in the first 12 days of the month because he had like 11 extra base hits or whatever it was. He's been a one-man show. The truth of the matter is, you know, water generally finds its level, right? 162 games will even you out. And even when Bo was wearing the goat horns and frustrating the hell out of people, even when he was wearing the goat horns and frustrating the hell out of people, he still had an OPS of like 100, 103, 104. He wasn't bad by any means. He was just below expectations. And now he's ridiculous in September. It's funny. At the end of August, Ross Stripling, who is a weekly guest on my podcast, Deep Left Field, and I'm sure you guys listen to every week, Ross Stripling said, "We are just a Bo Bichette getting hot away from taking off." And he did, and they did. So I think when you look at the season as a whole, you have to look at the season as a whole. It's... I was going to say it's never too late to salvage your numbers, but often it is. And I heard an ex-colleague of mine, Sweeney Murdy, who was like the Yankees talk version of me when I did Jays talk. He said Joe Torre used to go up to the players in September, go up to some guys and say, "Look, it's too late for you to hit 300 this year, but it's not too late for you to hit 300 in September. So let's go." And for some guys, it is too late. Teoscar Hernandez, it's too late to salvage a season for him, right? Bo Bichette, you would have thought it might be, but clearly it wasn't. And I don't know if he can keep this up for the next 4 weeks. One would think it's impossible. Lots of the players that I've talked to have said, "I've seen guys go on heaters like Bo's gone on, but I haven't seen it go for this long." So I wonder how much longer it's going to last. But we saw him... when he was bad for 4.5 months and he was a league average hitter. That's a pretty good floor.
For sure.
Mike, you mentioned Ross Stripling as a podcast guest. We'll get to Deep Left Field before we get you out of here. We are pros who will give you the opportunity to plug, absolutely. But I want to talk about Ross Stripling, the player, because he's been sort of an interesting fulcrum for the Blue Jays rotation. They'd be in much worse shape without him, especially with the season Berríos has had that's been so up and down, and overall just, you know, not particularly strong. Where do you stand on sort of the two Ross Stripling questions right now? The first one being, if you get to a Game 3 of a wild card series and you've started Manoah and Gausman, is he that guy over Berríos? And then the second one being, what do we do about Ross Stripling in the offseason if we're the Toronto Blue Jays, because he's a player who's pretty hard to put a price tag on being so good this season compared to his recent track record?
Yeah, those are tough questions. I push back on Berríos a little bit. He hasn't been that up and down. I mean, the ERA is 5, which sucks. I mean, plainly sucks. But it's because, you know, most pitchers are good in their good starts and just sort of okay in their bad starts and blow up a couple of times. it's because Barrios has been very good in his good starts and absolutely abominable in his bad starts. And they're way more good than bad. I think he's made 29 starts this year. 22 of them have been good. 7 of them have been awful. So sort of like, you know, when you run a guy out there and he gives up 4 or 5 runs over 6 innings and he was bad and he loses, but Barrios, he gives up 11. And you got no chance to come back. But they've still won so many more of his starts than they've lost, and only 2 of them in his bad ones. I think I would love to see Stripling get that Game 3 start in a best-of-3 series, but I think $121 million or whatever it is means that Barrios gets that start, unless he's had a couple of really crappy ones down the stretch. Unless Stripling doesn't bounce back from yesterday and, you know, becomes average over his final 3 starts of the season, which is hard to imagine. But, you know, I wrote in the Star today, Stripling's always had to fight against that idea that he doesn't have the stuff and therefore doesn't have the ceiling. He can't go out and dominate like Barrios and Gausman and Manoa, even though he's gone out and dominated so many times this year. So I think Barrios gets the start. I would love Stripling to get the start. And as for next year, I mean, we haven't talked about it on the podcast or off. I would expect that there's no hometown discount for the Blue Jays. I would expect that if some team wants to give him a Steven Matzy sort of contract, that he would and should jump at it. I don't think the Blue Jays will give him that contract, but I think they should. I would love to see them offer him 3 and 40 and see what he does with it. I think you might be able to qualify him, but he's only going to have pitched 130, 135 innings, so they might not want to do that. He's a guy I would really, really like to see them keep around, but he's also 32. His first shot at free agency, his only shot at a set up your grandkids sort of contract. And remember, he's a financial guy too, right? He's a stockbroker, so he's gonna want to maximize that earning potential. I can see him wanting to go home to Texas and be like a mainstay in the rotation. I can see someone offering him a non-swingman job and him jumping at that. I would really love for it to be here. But I would say, and again, this is no inside info or anything, I would say it's a less than 50-50 chance that he stays in Toronto.
Yeah, I think that role situation, the role promise of full-time starter may be as important as the money. I think that's a great insight. Speaking of Ross Stripling, speaking of deep left field, speaking of the Toronto Star, 80 episodes deep into deep left field. Obviously, it's been a bit of a change for you. You were a radio guy for decades. Now you're into the podcast game. What surprised you about the show, and what conversation have you had in the last 80 episodes? You've had a lot of guests, sometimes multiple. What conversation has been the most surprising to you in that time?
Ooh, those are good questions. Yeah, well, first of all, I'm happy to be able to fit into the podcast space. And I think that one of the reasons that I went to the Star was that they were looking at expanding that sort of thing. And, you know, given my years in that industry, just like a radio show, right? Except it's one that you get to tune into whenever you want. And you can pause it and all that stuff. So I really do like that audio component. I like to have those conversations. I love having those conversations with fans, and hopefully we'll be able to figure out a way to do that again. You know, it's interesting how it evolved, because at the beginning of it, there was no access at all, right? There was Zoom rooms. Right. You had to sort of really work hard through media relations department. And my thing over the last 30 years is bypassing media department, right? When I had the Blue Jay a Day pregame show during the playoffs from, I don't know, 2004 to 2017, it was because I didn't have to go through PR departments. I could just text a guy or call a guy and say, hey, come on the radio, and they would. And so I like, now that we have the access back, being able to do that. But it was some interesting stuff, like some Zooms with that allowed me to really expand the reach. Paul Lee from Kim's Convenience was a monthly guest last year. I've had lots of stars of stage and screen. The Getty Lee conversation last month was incredible. I think Josh Donaldson maybe surprised me the most. Donaldson was someone who, you know, when he was here, you really, he had his good days and his bad days. And if you didn't get him on a good day, he was sort of problematic. But he gave me, I think, 18 minutes in the Twins dugout at the end of September last year. And it was a wonderful conversation. And he sort of, you know, he had tears in his eyes. I had tears in my eyes. He was talking about, like, some compensation going on beside me. But he was talking about, you know, Jay's talk in 2015. And I'm like, how do you even know what the hell was going on Jay's talk in 2015? That was a really cool conversation. Just like Stroman's was a really cool conversation this year. I had a talk with Brandon Hyde last year after the Robbie Ray stuff at the end of the season. Hyde was one of the people who managed for the Blue Jays job that went to Charlie Montoyo, or who interviewed for it. So I got to know him that way. That was a really cool conversation. There have been a lot, and a lot of the off-season stuff where, you know, you just get these guys sitting down and they'll talk. It's Simber for half an hour, Danny Jansen for half an hour. I mean, like Kevin Gausman for half an hour in the parking lot of the spring training complex in Dunedin. So there have been a lot, and it's been a lot of fun because, you know, when I was on the radio, my interviews with players were under a 4.5 minute time limit. Right. And I love being able to really dig deep and have these conversations. A lot of times they just won't stop talking.
Mike, before we get you out of here, we know your time is precious out in Philadelphia. The kind of the biggest story around baseball right now is what Aaron Judge is doing. And as we record this, he's just hit his 60th home run. It is an interesting situation because there are different ways to view his pursuit of the record, what record you consider to be the one that matters, for lack of a better term. How are you observing and viewing kind of a historic season that Aaron Judge is having right now?
I mean, I think it's super cool, and he might win the Triple Crown, and, you know, Luis Arraez got to pick his game up to stop him from doing that, but I think it's really amazing. Look, the record is 73, whether you want to believe it or not, whatever. I've only noticed one or two people saying Aaron Judge is doing it clean. I don't think we can say that, which is too bad. Everybody lost the benefit of the doubt by what happened, you know, forever. Right, Roger Maris was popping greenies like they were jelly beans, and I have a feeling that, you know, taking amphetamines to actually be awake for a game might be more of a performance enhancer than anabolic steroids are, because steroids don't help you hit a curveball, but greenies, you know, actually make sure you can play that day. So I think it's all overstated and over whatever. And people want to make it special because it's the American League record or the real record. Honestly, I mean, what's the National League record for a hit streak? What's the American League record for career home runs? You know, nobody goes by it. Nobody refers to all-time records as this is an American League record or this is a National League record or this is a Major League record. So that's all just... It's just BS. He's having an amazing season. Enjoy the amazingness of the amazing season. It's not a record unless he hits 14 homers in the next 2 weeks, which people keep pitching to him might happen, but I'm not betting on it. But it really is. It is phenomenal. At the same time, you know, middle of September last year when Vladimir Guerrero Jr. was challenging for a Triple Crown, nobody was saying, he's challenging for a Triple Crown, so he should be the MVP, not Shohei Ohtani. You know, let's see Aaron Judge put up a 3.10 ERA, right? Qualify. It's an amazing thing that's happening. Somebody wrote yesterday that just enjoy them both. I think it was Joe Sheehan saying enjoy both seasons without putting that who should be the MVP argument in it, and that's a fair point, but. You know, the guy who's the best pitcher on his team and the best hitter on his team, I think, should probably be the MVP.
They're both doing different versions of Babe Ruth, which I think is sort of neat. Yeah. Mike, it is so appreciated to give us your time today. We know you're out and about and busy. It's so great to see you around the team and to have your voices in our ears again, covering the Toronto Blue Jays. Thank you so much, Mike Billman.
My pleasure, guys. Anytime. Happy to do it.
Thank you, Mike.
Ah, my arm hurts. I was leaving it on a post to help. I'm at the Philadelphia Convention Center or something. That's where I went for my peace and quiet. Have you
Very
guys
good. Been there? I was around Philly for like one afternoon, but we stayed way too close to the stadium, so I didn't see enough of the actual city.
Oh, yeah, there's nothing there. I'm going to the Reading Terminal Market, which is a combination of St. Lawrence Market and the food building at the CNE. But like 20 times as big. It's the greatest thing in the world.
Exciting. Yeah, I saw the Liberty Bell. It's one thing I did.
It's a good city if you're an American history buff. But yeah. Other than that, it's, yeah.
My wife has a master's in American history.
Food ain't bad either.
Yes, that's right. All right, man, we're going to let you go. Thank you so much.
All right, kids. Seriously, anytime. Happy to do it.
Appreciate it. All right.
Thanks, Mike.
Take it easy.
Thank you so much to Mike Wilner. As we said, you can catch his work at the Toronto Star and the Deep Left Field podcast. Him and Ross Stripling, you hear a lot of on there. Some great insights. A guy who's been around, been there, done that, and recorded the podcast about it. Nick, before we get out of here, North Star Bets has tons of great action as the baseball games heat up and they get more and more exciting. We are going to check out the run line. Nick, always so great on NorthStarBets.ca to read your insights about the games and about the things, bigger picture at large, stuff that is going on. Always somebody who finds a great angle into the stories. With just about 2 weeks left in the season, what do you have your eye on for the props as we come down to the end here?
I mean, there's really one divisional battle that matters. I know you'll find open markets for the AL East. I wouldn't advise betting against the Yankees at this point.
I'm so close. 2 weeks. If I could rely on the Pittsburgh Pirates even a little bit.
And if the Tampa Bay Rays could have scored a run in that last game at the end of last year, if the Red Sox bullpen could hold the lead, it'd be a different world. But the division that's interesting to me is that NL East. You've got a great battle between the defending World Series champions, the Atlanta Braves, and the New York Mets, who have just some of the most talent in all of baseball. Right now, as we record, the Mets are up by a single game, which has their odds at minus 230, and the Braves are at plus 175. Now, that's pretty interesting to me, the idea you can get a team a single game back at 175. And they will play each other. They have a three-game series later in the season. So there is value there on the Braves. This is a really impressive squad. The one thing you need to be aware of before laying down a bet like this is that the Mets have a much easier schedule from here on out. The Mets' rest of season strength of schedule is a 4.77 win percentage, whereas for the Braves, it's a 5.03. It's not like an insane run for the Braves by any means, but the Mets will have a little bit of an easier time. So that helps explain the discrepancy in the odds there. Still think the Braves might be worth a look, though, at 175.
Yeah, 175 for a game back. I mean, that's a coin flip. That's as you said, one thing happens different here, one thing happens different there, and all of a sudden you've got a two-game flip in the schedule. I think that's a great pick. You are absolutely right that from 2 weeks ago, the American League East banging the drum that the Yankees weren't going to hold on. Basically, turn the season around for them, I think, and salvage them. We basically know what the playoff picture is in the American League, barring something crazy happening in the Central, or I don't know, the Orioles not losing again, and Seattle or the Rays falling apart. More or less, we know who the teams will be, the six teams that will be vying for those spots. What I'm looking at right now is which one of those teams is coming out of the American League and going to the World Series as the American League team. Easy to bet on the Astros here. They are plus 145. You went through just at the beginning of this show about the teams that have made the World Series. The quiet part of that was that most of those teams were the Houston Astros. When you were like, the team that they lost to was first, that team was the Astros a bunch of the times. You are basically never wrong to bet on them to make it to the ALCS. It's pretty easy to see them making the World Series. The Yankees are in second at plus 225. I've already laid out, I don't believe in the Yankees. I think, Aroldis Chapman has not been himself, and there were enough little holes in that boat, especially in the infield with some of the age, with some of the breaking down, with some of the, you know, Kiner Falefa and the problems they've had with Gleyber Torres and Anthony Rizzo's health and Josh Donaldson's overall body of work and the breaking down of Stanton. Everyone besides Judge, you can put a pretty big question mark beside there at plus 225. The intriguing ones, and of course, if you're going through the wild card, you're going to have the higher odds, but the Blue Jays at plus 700, the Mariners at plus 900, the Rays at plus 1,000, and the Guardians at plus 1,500. The Blue Jays and Mariners there. If you're a believer in the way those teams are built, and I mean, the Mariners have been so good since the back half of the year. They added, they loaded up, they have pitching, they have hitting, they have young, exciting players that you know, the classic, don't even know what a big spot they're in yet. Julio Rodriguez has made a ton of headlines already. Why not a little bit more? And the Blue Jays, as we mentioned, I mean, they're coming alive at the exact right time. If there was a time to be red hot, you would want it to be mid to late September and into October. It is not crazy to me to see either one of those teams come out of the East, especially if they are, pardon me, out of the East, out of the American League. If they get it to break right, if they get the Yankees and are able to sort of knock them off, it'll be tough to get past Houston at plus 145. But if you like a big number, the Jays at plus 700 or the Mariners at plus 900, you have to feel good about the cheering for it as well. You're not cheering for the Yankees and Astros, which is just no way to live. Well, other than unless you like watching the World Series, I guess.
Yeah, I don't mind that as an idea at all. The Yankees are the team I'm avoiding out of that group just because I don't think the odds are long enough. I think they're more – I realize that they're not going to be playing in the wild card series, so that makes a difference. But the Astros are the clear favorites here. It's not a super generous odds for a team to make it that far in the playoffs. Even though they're a high-quality team, it's sort of an Astros in the field situation. And I would rather probably throw a dart somewhere in the field. The Blue Jays and the Mariners seem like the two most dangerous wildcard teams to me. I wouldn't touch the Guardians. I don't think I would touch the Rays either, although they seem to find a way. So maybe you could go about it making a bet on the Astros and then making another bet on one of these teams as a hedge as well. That might be one way to do it. But betting just on the Astros is a little bit tricky with a payout that's not that significant. But they are the class of the American League.
For sure. You can find the markets on those futures and every single game the rest of the regular season and the playoffs, NorthstarBets.ca. You also get Nick's incredible insights as well as the insights from the rest of the great team over there. Thank you so much to NorthstarBets as well as presenting this show, Pitch Talks. We appreciate your listenership. We would really appreciate a like, a subscribe, a review, a 5 stars, whatever it is your podcast catcher allows you to review. If you do that for us, it helps us out in the long run and the short run. We really appreciate it. I am your boy, the Zoobs, Andrew Zuber from The Parlay. I have been joined, as always, by Nick Ashburn from North Star Bets. We thank you so much this week for listening to Pitch Talks.
Pitch Talks, brought to you by North Star Bets. That's a win.